It's the Midnight Radio Network, 800-288-9227, and Ask the Law. Welcome. Get aboard, drivers, at 800-288-9227. Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
Ask the Law is a service of the Midnight Radio Network and Old Blue USA. You can go to askthelaw.org anytime and submit a question, by the way, and they will work very hard to get that answer right back to you. And you should know that the questions and answers are up to date as of this morning, that being Monday, March 2nd, 2009. If you want to get on board with a question about regulations, 800-288-9227. As retired senior trooper Monty Dial is in studio with us, as he is on every first Monday, 800-288-9227. Last hour, Monty, we were talking about the border crossings and as it pertains to Mexico, the Mexican truck program, which looks like, it, if Congress has their way, will come to an end. I'm actually all for that, with, especially when I was proven right once again. It's, I hate to be proven right in this case, but it's true. Growing up on the Mexican border, I know that there was a tremendous amount of violence, but now it's unprecedented. I can't imagine being down there right now. There are plenty of warnings coming out from the State Department for Americans not to, or at least to be careful when they travel mm-hmm. to border towns, because a lot of the violence from the drug cartels is spilling over into the U.S. right mm-hmm. now.
Yes.
So there are plenty of warnings already, and I guess if a driver has listened to this program for any amount of time, you know how I feel about the whole Mexican pilot program. I'm a free trader all day long, but it was just a mess to begin with. I think the most efficient way to do it is the way we've been doing it. Drop it at the border, they come get it. They come drop it at the border, and we go get it. And I think that's an efficient way of doing it. They simply don't have the infrastructure there on several levels. So here we are. Secretary La Hood has already said that he likely will not stand in the way of Congress. So we'll see how that goes and find out, the end result very soon. However, states like Texas and California already have agreements in place that allow Mexican drivers to be here, which is fine. But the question became, especially when the Mexican pilot program started, what is it that the Mexican drivers have to know as far, or really, I guess, any foreign driver? We see drivers that, back in the driver shortage, the so-called driver shortage, you had companies going over to, Eastern Europe that were bringing drivers here, companies mm-hmm. that would go over there and recruit drivers and bring them here. So you had drivers from Eastern Bloc company or countries that were coming here. If they don't know English, what is it that they have to know? What's the minimum standard?
When you go to the North American out of service criteria and you start reading what it requires the driver to do, it says driver is unable to communicate sufficiently to understand and respond to official inquiries and directions.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean that he has to speak the language here in the United States, English,
mm-hmm.
But he has to understand and can reasonably communicate.
Okay.
So if a DOT official asks the driver to turn the headlights on,
mm-hmm.
tell the driver to turn the turn signals on, step on the brake, whatever, park your vehicle, bring all your paperwork inside.
Mm-hmm.
He has to understand what is being, the instructions being given to him, so that he knows what to do. If he gets that deer in the headlight look, then obviously the driver does not understand, and at that point the driver is placed out of service.
Yeah, and I think that was the common misnomer, is that they had to, I don't know, that plenty of them were out there and didn't speak English, I guess, or that there was no real rule in place that existed, and I guess the concern of the drivers is first for safety. Certainly it's motivated by loss of job as well, but that of safety. If an American driver has to know all the rules and has to be able to communicate with an officer, then any driver from another country should be expected to be able to do the same.
And really, I never had a problem. Of course, we've been dealing here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We've been dealing with the Hispanic drivers, you know, even the local drivers.
Right.
But we have stopped some of the trucks that were coming across, and they understood the instructions that were given to them. We had a little problem in the response, trying to understand his responses given back to us.
Okay.
But if we told him to do something, he knew what to do.
Okay.
The biggest problem I had working the road, and this is nothing against the Canadian drivers,
right?
But the French speaking people out of Quebec,
yeah,
I had a harder time understanding them,
right,
than I did the drivers coming across from the Mexican border.
Right.
But here again, if you take your time, and it can be worked out,
right,
to where each one of you can understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the ones that I've ever dealt with, I placed out of service,
right,
when I was working, because we could not communicate with each other.
Yeah, so there was never, on at least anecdotal evidence here, but at least in your experience, no situation
no.
that far. How long has Mexico and Texas had that agreement in place? Do you know?
As long as I can remember.
Right, right. And what does that say, that they can work within the state of Texas, and how do they get that exemption to go beyond that border radius?
What they do is, under the cross border that Texas and Mexico have had for years, the Mexican truck can come across into Texas, and he has to stay in a county that touches the Red River.
Okay.
So as an example, the driver could come in, say, at Eagle Pass,
mm-hmm,
and he could travel all the way to Brownsville on the U.S. side,
right,
provided that he stayed in a county that touched the river.
Okay.
Now, the Mexican trucks that I've seen up here, what they have done is they have established a partnership with someone that is in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And they're real easy to spot, because they will have a Texas combination tag on the truck,
right,
along with the Mexican tag,
mm-hmm,
and likewise on the trailer. And, you know, they're running back and forth, and they were doing this long before NAFTA was ever thought of.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, we're still seeing them.
Yeah.
Last I recall, we were still seeing them. I haven't seen that many of the actual, quote, NAFTA trucks.
Right.
But I have seen companies that have a business set up in Mexico. They have a business set up in the United States.
Right.
And the trucks run back and forth.
It's just a dual operation.
It's a dual operation.
That's interesting. You know, I guess it's a, and these are, we know that in the past, U.S. companies kind of have a business partner or an extension of their business in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just basically the opposite, where their home country is Mexico,
right,
but they have an extension of their business here in Texas.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're legal. They're legal. They're okay,
right,
to be in Dallas,
yeah,
or Amarillo.
Right. If Mr. LaHood, does away with the so-called NAFTA program,
right,
these companies are still going to keep running.
They still have the ability to operate,
yes,
operate inside of Texas.
And, yes.
Do you know of any other states? I know that we got word that California may have the similar type setup, but
California has something, and here again, I'm going to go back and rely on what RJ told me.
Hmm.
Theirs is a little bit further. I think RJ said they can travel up to 125 miles,
right,
once they cross the border into California. And I think a lot of that had to do with getting them up into the area up around Bakersfield,
right,
places like that, you know, where they did a lot of produce.
Right, yeah.
And so they had the 125-mile rule, I believe, in California.
Yeah, where they grow all those avocados,
right,
and oranges and everything else,
right,
in that area. All right, drivers, if you want to get on board, 800-288-9227. I have another question in my mind that I want to bring up, if we have time a little bit later on, regarding anything you might have heard about California Air Resources Board and some of the new standards that they put in place and enforcement out there, and how that is proceeding. If you want to get on board, drivers, 800-288-9227. Back to your questions in just a moment
on the Midnight Radio Network. 800-288-9227 and Ask the Law. Drivers, get aboard right now if you have any question concerning regulations, any questions that you have. 800-288-9227. 800-288-9227. Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
Any movement here, by the way, we should let you know that Ask the Law service of R.J. Taylor's crew there at Old Blue USA. You can go to oldblueusa.org or askthelaw.org. And submit your regulatory questions. They'll get back to you as soon as possible. And the questions on this morning's program and answers are up to date as of March 2nd, 2009, can change without notice. Are there any movement there on electronic onboard recorders? The question has come up. Anything that you have heard of any of your contacts in Washington where we should expect some kind of proposed rulemaking or anything else? With electronic onboard recorders?
The only thing that I, or let me put it this way, the latest that I have read, of course, when LaHood stepped in and Obama was elected president, you know, he immediately told all of his staffers, you know, freeze everything right now, and we're going to go back and take a look at everything. And the latest that I have heard out of the Department of Transportation is they are moving forward with some of the proposals that were placed on hold.
Right.
Combining the CDL with the medical, it is now moving forward.
Right.
I think it's supposed to take effect June the 17th or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're also satisfied with the study that FMCSA did on the EOBRs, and my understanding, it is moving forward. They have not given a date as to when that is going to go be put in place into effect, other than they are possibly looking at expanding it to a wider use of more than what was previously proposed.
Right, right. Well, because the what was first discussed, or I guess the biggest discussion that came out of electronic onboard recorders would be that companies that voluntarily put it on, the idea that was put on, it was never a proposed rulemaking, has not been as of yet, but the idea was that we put, and this was John Hill that put forth this idea, if there was a voluntary action on the part of a carrier and they volunteered to put them on, then they would get certain considerations during any compliance review.
Correct.
Or, on the other hand, if they failed a certain number of compliance reviews within a certain amount of time, then it would be mandatory for that company or that driver. And now, the word that I have read, at least some of the ideas that I've seen, in news stories, seems to be what you just said, and that is expanding this a little bit further to essentially include the majority of the industry, if not all of it.
Correct. As far as to what extent, we're still going to have to wait and see what, FMCSA, you know, proposal they come up with. Yes, the initial proposal that John Hill had put forward was if a motor carrier had gone through two compliance reviews and factor three, which has to do with driver's hours of service, if that factor was rated unsatisfactory in two subsequent compliance reviews, then it was going to be mandatory for every vehicle in the company's fleet to have EOBRs and use them for 2 years. At that point, then they would go back and take a look, and if the company had improved and could get factor three into a satisfactory rating, then they could discontinue the use.
Right.
The motor carriers that voluntarily install them on their own, then what they would do is they had some bones thrown to them.
Yeah.
So that if a state or federal auditor came in, found factor three to be unsatisfactory, they would stop, draw a new sample of drivers, hours of service,
mm-hmm.
in other words, the logbooks,
right.
and be given the opportunity to have factor three rated satisfactory.
Right. As we go to a break here, this would all be tied to, if it was mandatory, tied to some type of GPS device.
Yes.
Right? All right. Drivers, if you want to get on board, you have a question about hours of service or anything else, maybe you've got a common misnomer out there that you're hearing out there and you think maybe it's wrong or that it's right, we'd love to hear from you. It is Ask the Law
on the Midnight Radio Network. It's Midnight Radio Network and drivers, it's Ask the Law, 800-288-9227, Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
Retired Senior Trooper Monty Dial from the Texas Highway Patrol, he is here. If you want to get on board, Ask the Law is a service of OBLU USA. AskTheLaw.org is the website. And remember, the answers you hear on this morning's program, they are up to date as of March 2nd, 2009, can change without notice. Programming note coming up this Friday is Northland Night. And we are going to be saying goodbye to an old friend. Dale Scheffner from Northland Insurance is retiring. It's funny because he says he's only 62, but yet he has 70 years in the insurance business. I'm not sure how he does that.
Boy, it's the insurance business has really aged him, hasn't it? Like a president in office
40.
For 8 years.
Yeah, it's
he's actually 42.
I think it's this program. I think it was Northland Night that aged him. But drivers, we want you to be here for that. This Friday morning to say, if you'd like to get on board Friday morning during Northland Night, to say thank you to Dale, because he's a guy who, like Monty and RJ Taylor, who really do have a genuine concern for this industry. He was the one who spearheaded years ago Northland Night, the radio program, to kind of get, just kind of put a finger on the pulse of the driving community. And has really, done a lot of work that I think has benefited many, many drivers over the years. So he is worthy of that praise. If you'd like to thank him, get on board this Friday morning.
And didn't he actually extend it? I mean, wasn't he going to retire like a year ago, I thought?
He told me last Mid-America. So it was a year ago. He told me last Mid-America that he was making preparations for retirement. I didn't mention anything because it wasn't meant to be public back then. So I knew that he was going to be retiring. Northland Night, however, we should let you know, Northland Night will continue. I've got so many one-liners about Dale that I can throw in right now, but it's not the time for it. We'll talk with Dale and the crew coming up. And the crew this Friday morning, Dale Scheffner's last official Northland Night. I say last official because, we just may have to lend his expertise to us from time to time. Again, Senior Trooper Monty Dial, retired from the Texas Highway Patrol, is in studio right now. If you have a question about hours of service, if you have a question about railroad crossings, any regulatory items on your mind, this is the time to get them in, as we do it every first Monday. It is Ask the Law at 800-288-9227. And we do have plenty of time before the next break and an open line if you'd like to get through. But first, my question, CSA 2010, what is that and how is this going to affect drivers? You and I had a lengthy discussion here during the break, but the rules are getting a little tighter starting in January of next year.
That is correct. CSA 2010, and here again, first off, let me say this. I am not from the government. I am merely a messenger.
You do not, and when you were wearing a badge, you did not write the law. You only enforced
the law. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
All right.
But at the same time, one of the things that working with RJ, I did learn, and that is I do have a passion for the trucking industry,
yes,
for truck drivers.
No doubt.
One of the things that I've always wanted to do is make sure that drivers are properly informed.
Hmm.
It did not make a difference to me whether you liked it or not.
Mm-hmm.
My job was to make sure that you understood what the regulations are.
Right.
And here again, this is some of the things that are coming about with CSA 2010. It's not whether I like them or not. It's not whether Gary likes them or not, or whether Eric likes them or not, or whether you as a truck driver like them or not. This is what's fixing to happen.
Right.
Under the current compliance review process, the motor carriers, or FMCSA, uses four scorable safety areas.
Mm-hmm.
And based upon your score within these four SAEs, determines whether or not a compliance review will be conducted. That process, if FMCSA moves on with the program that they have in place, will come about in probably October of 2010. It will the compliance review process will basically be a no more process. What will happen is the driver will now look at all of the violations that are noted on an inspection. It doesn't make a difference if you were issued a ticket or whether they showed it as a violation. That now will be time weighted against the driver. What will happen is this information will be updated in the federal database system mm-hmm. every 30 days.
Right.
If FMCSA sees a problem, they will in turn send a letter to the motor carrier. The motor carrier will have to respond to the letter being sent, whether it has to do with the company themselves, whether it has to do with a particular vehicle, or whether it has to deal with a particular driver. The company will have to send a letter back explaining what they will do to correct the problem.
Okay.
Now then, we go back in this big revolving circle again. FMCSA will start watching it again. If the same problem comes up again, now then FMCSA or a state partner will now contact the motor carrier and have them, along with the driver or management, to come in and have a face-to-face meeting. They will once again formulate a battle plan on what they're going to do to correct this problem. Once that's done, we go back in the circle again and we start watching. If the same problem still exists, now then FMCSA will set up a full-blown compliance review and look at the entire company. Based upon the results of that compliance review, either the company goes back in the circle again, or the company at that point in time will be shut down completely.
Wow. Based on your anecdotal evidence and what you saw over the years that you were behind the badge and out there on the job, and let's just take the last few years as an example, as a sample, are we going to be seeing, based on this, are we going to be seeing a lot of carriers in your mind that are going to have concerns, are going to have problems that they're going to need to be fixed and updated equipment or whatever it may be? I mean, is this a huge problem that's being addressed by CSA 2010, you think?
Yes, it is. And based upon the last 4 or 5 years of when I was doing compliance reviews,
mm-hmm.
there are some companies that better get their act together or they will have the door shut on them.
Wow. Interesting. A lot of that have to do with hours of service? Is that?
No. Hours of service is just one of many.
Yeah.
One of many things.
So, but equipment certainly has been a concern over the years.
Correct. It'll actually get into the alcohol and drug testing.
Mm-hmm.
It gets into the equipment.
Right.
And it gets into the drivers. Gets into their accident countermeasures. So, you know, there's a real wide variety of things that they're looking at, where right now, under the current compliance review, is you basically have six areas that are scored, and depending upon how you score in each one of those determines on whether or not you get a satisfactory, a conditional, or an unsatisfactory rating.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And you said that one of those areas, I believe it was area number three, was hours of service.
Yes.
So that did that have a greater weight in the past? Well, I guess leading up to 2010, does it have a greater weight? And will that change with CSA 2010?
That part of it, really, in looking up and reading CSA 2010, they haven't really come out and said whether or not one violation is going to carry more weight than another one,
okay,
like it does under the current.
It's just that the list, essentially, the list during that review, during and that inspection, is going to be longer than it was before. The
yes.
items is going to will be more numerous.
Correct. Under, like I say, currently under the current compliance review process we do now, they're basically looking at violations that actually resulted in the vehicle or and driver that were placed out of service.
Wow.
Under CSA 2010, they don't care whether or not it resulted in the vehicle being placed out of service or not. It was a violation, and now then it carries a time-weighted value.
Wow. More in just a moment with retired senior trooper Monty Dial from the Texas Highway Patrol on Ask the Law
on the Midnight Radio Network. It's the Midnight Radio Network and Ask the Law, 800-288-9227. Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
And retired senior trooper Monty Dial from the Texas Highway Patrol is here courtesy of Old Blue USA. AskTheLaw.org, that is the website. If you have a question anytime, you can submit it there at the website. They'll do their best to get it back as soon as possible. And remember, all answers on the program are up to date as of Monday, March 2nd, 2009. Can change without notice. Trooper Dial, California, the California Air Resources Board, has new rules that went into effect, over the last year or so, some new ones that went into effect in January this year, more on the way. Any idea or any word from your counterparts there in California as to, how those inspections are being done or how that's going or if, any enforcement is being done at this point, any citations being written for any of these engine compliance reviews?
As a matter of fact, there was, and I wish I could remember which website I went to, but there was a company in California that ended up receiving a pretty hefty fine.
Wow.
Because of the fact that they had some vehicles that could not, and this was a California-based company.
Mm.
And their vehicles could not pass the emissions test, nor were their mechanics properly trained in how to do the emissions test. And like I say, I wish I could remember the amount of money that they paid in fines.
Right.
But part of the settlement was that this motor carrier had to send their mechanics to a community college or whatever to learn how to properly inspect and repair vehicles to meet the CARB requirements. I did hear from RJ some time back, and he told me that there are citations being issued for on-road violations of the CARB requirements.
Interesting. Well, we will do it again next month. And Trooper Dial, thank you so much.
Yes, enjoyed it.
Ask the Law
on the Midnight Radio Network.
Motor.